Wild Missions original podcast.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
Do you recognize that catchphrase at all? Of course you do. It's Carol Baskin, co-founder of the non-profit sanctuary Big Cat Rescue in Tampa, Florida. Whilst many people have only recently heard about Big Cat Rescue through Netflix's Tiger King, the organization has been caring and protecting wildcats for over 30 years. Carol and her husband Howard have also been tireless advocates for ending private ownership of big cats in the US, resulting in the Big Cat Public Safety Act signed into US law in December 2022. In March 2023, Big Cat Rescue made a huge announcement, announcing that all the remaining cats at the center would be relocated to the Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge in Arkansas, and that they would sell the land where Big Cat Rescue is located. This is far from the end for Big Cat Rescue. It's the start of a new adventure in investing the expected millions from the property sale into conservation projects for cats in the wild. So, join Howard Baskin and I as we explore a big future for Big Cat Rescue. I'm Andy Varvel, and this is Cats of the Wild, Episode 33, A Big Future.
Hi there.
This is Howard Baskin.
From Big Cat Rescue in Tampa, Florida.
Howard is Carol's husband, and the two met at an animal charity event in November 2002.
Before I met Carol, I knew nothing about wildlife or animal welfare. I had always had a cat or a dog at one time or another, but it was really when I met her that I got educated and adopted her passion, and it became my passion. It was an event organized by someone we each knew independently, and the purpose of that event was to organize the people who work with the domestic cats to try to reduce the amount of cats that get euthanized. And so we just happened totally serendipitously to both arrive early because of a little glitch with the invitations, and were the only two there when we got there. I met her as we were walking in, and we walked up to this room where there was a nice little buffet and a bartender across the room, and nobody else, because it didn't start for a half hour. There had been this mistake. And so I said to her, well, let me go ask the bartender. Maybe the speaker is in a different room, and then we come here. And I went over to him, and he said, well, it doesn't start for a half hour. So I walked back to Carol, and with a very serious face, I said to her, it turns out there's no function. And she looked at me like, well, confused, like, what do you mean? And I said, it turns out the whole thing was a sham that Mary set up just so you and I would meet.
Despite Howard joking it was a blind date, it actually wasn't. It was a very real event, and the couple married 2 years later in November 2004. Big Cat Rescue has always had a three-pronged mission: provide the best home they can for the cats in their care, end the abuse of big cats in captivity, and prevent the extinction of big cats in the wild. The sanctuary started in March 1995. And it wasn't long before Carol began advocating to end private ownership of big cats in the US and abusive practices such as cub petting.
Carol had worked on federal legislation starting in the late 90s and passed one in 2003 along with other people. You know, she was active with it, but she didn't have then as much of a role with it as we had with this bill, where we were really out front being such a major part of it. Not to diminish the work of others, but I think it's fair to say it would not have passed without our effort. So in 2003, there was a law passed called the Captive Wildlife Safety Act, and it had an effect, and it had limited capability, but it had huge loopholes. It still allowed the cub petting. It still allowed the people who had USDA licenses to swap these animals back and forth. Between then and 2011, there was a bill floating around that, you know, never went anywhere, that was oriented this way. And then in 2011, too long a story, but a serendipitous set of circumstances, we ended up going to DC and meeting with representatives from about 8 or 9 of the large animal welfare organizations like HSUS and International Fund for Animal Welfare and Born Free, organizations like that. And we all agreed to a 3-pronged strategy to try to address the big cat problem. And one was trying to get USDA to ban the cub petting. We put a lot of effort into that. It was totally unsuccessful. They just sat on that. It's called a petition, but it's not the kind of petition people sign. It's more like an appellate appeal where you write up an argument to them as to why they should do it. And they're supposed to respond according to our law in a, quote, reasonable time, but nobody defines reasonable. So that just sat there. The second thing was something called the generic tiger rule, where the Fish and Wildlife Service here, normally under the Endangered Species Act, in order to buy, sell, transport, do various things with endangered species, you have to get a permit from the Fish and Wildlife Service, and you justify that permit by arguing that what you're doing, which is a violation of the law, should be accepted because it does some good for the species. And they decided that generic tigers, in other words, tigers that you do not know the subspecies. So, and all of the tigers in this country that are outside of our big AZA zoos are generic tigers. They're a blend mostly of some ratio of Bengal and Siberian that have just been mixed over the time. And so they decided those people didn't have to follow that rule. They didn't need a permit. Well, that opened the door to the people like Joe Exotic and Doc Gantle to just breed like crazy and sell them into people in backyard and stuff like that. So our goal was to get them to rescind that rule, to change it so that those activities would again become illegal. And we were successful with that. The Fish and Wildlife Service did that in 2016. That is part of the reason why Joe Exotic is in jail. Because the things that he was doing now became illegal again. And then the third part of it was the federal bill.
The Big Cat Public Safety Act passes. After passing the House of Representatives in July by more than a 2/3 bipartisan vote, we are thrilled to announce that today the Big Cat Public Safety Act passed the Senate unanimously. From here, it goes to the president for signature. The White House has already expressed support for the bill.
Federal bill does 2 simple things. It stops the cub petting, and the cub petting was what drove all this breeding, because these places would have 50 to 100 tigers just pumping out cubs constantly because you could only use them for a few months before they were too big to be used because they would become dangerous, and then they'd end up in backyards all over the country if they survived. And the second thing it does is it phases out what we call private ownership. The people here, in order to exhibit, in order to have the public come, you need a license from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA. But there are all these people, the state laws vary enormously, from a few good laws that ban owning the animals to some states that have absolutely no laws. It's easier to get a tiger than it is to get a dog, and other states in the middle that have a mix. And so what the law says is the people who have them are grandfathered in. They can keep the ones they have, but they cannot breed or acquire more. So what that means is over the next decade, most of those will die out, and in 15 years, all but a handful will be gone. And so with that gone, that's why I say the bill will dramatically reduce the need for rescues.
The passing of this bill was an incredible achievement from Carol, Howard, and all the other people and organizations that worked so hard over many years to get this signed into law. Episode 22, Backyard Big Cats, is another episode to listen to if you want to dive further into this bill, featuring Devin Shoey from Born Free USA.
We were just ecstatic, and we continue to be. For us, it was just such a long battle, so much time, so much money, and such a learning process along the way in the 11 years that it took to get there. You know, each year we would learn new things and get better and better at it and change what we were doing or change the bill a little bit as we learned what's going to work and what wasn't. No one who's not gone through that can, I don't think, really understand and appreciate the agony that goes into trying to pass a bill in our federal government, or probably any federal government.
Through the passing of the Big Cat Public Safety Act, they essentially paved a future where sentries like them would no longer be required in the US. The centre was once home to over 200 cats, but today, with just 41 cats, Carolyn Howard needed to make a big decision about the future for Big Cat Rescue.
The strategic question is, okay, how do we now have the most impact on the most animals? For the last decade, it was getting this federal bill passed. That's how we could impact the most animals. Now that that's done, the way we can impact the most animals is focus more on these projects in the wild. So how do we do that? You know, the other option would be to sit here and run the sanctuary until the last cat passed away. Well, you know, I did a bunch of financial analysis, and that's my background, and that does not work. You know, it takes about $1.5 million in overhead to run the sanctuary, and that doesn't drop as the number of cats drops. When we had 100 cats, well, that was $15,000 a cat. That was reasonable. Now, with 41 cats, that's $36,000 a cat. When we're down to 5 cats, are donors going to donate $1.5 million to take care of 5 cats? That would make absolutely no sense. I mean, I wouldn't even feel good if they did, because it would not be a reasonable use of their money.
They ultimately decided to relocate all of their cats to the Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge in Arkansas. Now, this certainly was not the cheapest nor the easiest option, but it was the right decision for the cats' welfare.
Well, one of the choices would have been to call around and say, how many cats could you take? How many cats could you take? And spread them among many sanctuaries. And there are other good sanctuaries who would have been candidates. We kind of made a list of criteria, much like you might like make a list of things when you're trying to hire someone to do your job or something like that. And when we just evaluated, Turpentine really kind of checked off all the boxes. And I felt by putting the animals in one place, we would know where they are. We could go visit. We could track, you know, what was happening. And it meant that we could do things. For instance, we have a big memorial wall from the past cats. So they are willing to take that, put it with the existing cats. The existing cats will get added to it, and it will become a permanent memorial there for what we had here, in a sense. And importantly, it would mean that we could direct our donors to one place and hopefully help them grow and take care of more cats, whereas it would be more difficult to say to our donors, well, you could support this cat there and this cat somewhere else. So it kind of made sense if we could do it. Also, there's the issue of having space. They sit on 450 acres, and most of which is undeveloped. Now, some of it can't be developed because of the terrain there in Northwest Arkansas, but they had this 13-acre, what they call a field, that was the next area that they, in their future planning, envisioned building enclosures on. And it's just perfect. It's perfect for all of our cats to be in larger enclosures than we can give them here, where we have less land close into the city, and build some extra enclosures that they will pay for to handle future rescue. So by moving our cats to Turpentine, who already have the overhead, so their incremental cost is $10,000 per tiger. And we've offered to pay that to fund the food and medical care for the cats there and to build the enclosures, which are now under construction there, which will cost us close to $2 million. So, you know, all of those things just added up perfectly. It was one of these things where you had to agonize. Here are the pluses and minuses, the pluses and minuses. They kind of, as I said, checked off all the boxes. The Smiths who operate it are a couple like us. So, you know, there was kind of a sense of camaraderie and a, you know, similar situation. but they're in their mid-50s. So they have a good decade or more ahead of them. I'm 73. So it meant it was at a place that, you know, wasn't an aging founder like us. Not a founder. Maybe Carol wouldn't like me to call her an aging founder.
This is a huge change, not only for Carol, Howard, and the entire Big Cat Rescue team, but it's also for the donors and supporters of Big Cat Rescue, some of whom have supported the sanctuary for decades.
This plan, it was an easy choice, except that it's an emotionally very difficult choice. You know, we are accustomed to the excitement of seeing cats arrive, and typically arrive from horrible circumstances and giving them the best life we can for the rest of their life.
The Big Cat Rescue is helping in what's being called the largest rescue of big cats in U.S. history.
Helping out in a big way. ABC Action News reporter Rodney Dunnigan is live this morning at Big Cat Rescue, and these animals came all the way from Colorado, Rodney.
That's right, Dan. They were actually being housed at a facility there in Colorado that went out of business. The sanctuary here taking in five of those tigers. And let me tell you, when you take a 30-hour trip inside of a trailer, this is what you get. These tigers.
Take those animals, which we've all become very, very attached to, just like you do with your personal pets. And if I stand out there in the property and just think about one of those cats leaving in a trailer instead of coming in, it makes my eyes water. It's very difficult. It's difficult for our volunteers who love the cats and our staff. So it's been an emotionally wrenching decision and kind of a shock to many of our supporters who, you know, never had to think about this, whereas I've had to think about it for the last year or so. So to them, the announcement came as a shock, but they are getting over that and realizing, as we publish information about why, and we did a Q&A for an hour answering questions about why. So it's been a rocky few weeks. You know, the donors ranged from some who said, my goodness, that's wonderful. Congratulations on your success and what a great plan. And in some cases said, I know this is going to be a tough financial year doing all that. Let me help more than I used to. And to others who have said, well, I guess you don't need me to donate anymore. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, we still have the cats this year until we build these enclosures and do that. And maybe you want to help support the in-situ work. But if not, you could support the cats at Turpentine. So we've had many, many conversations about this. And, you know, for me, walking around the sanctuary, when I've spent 20 years, I remember the agony of raising the money for the cat hospital and raising the money for the what we call the vacation rotation enclosure, the big one that the tigers rotate through. And, you know, all of the effort that went into building this place up. And so to see it disappear, even though I know better than anybody that it's the right thing to do and a necessary thing to do, it still touches, you know, me in an emotional way as I'm going around the place.
This brings us to the final prong of their three-pronged plan, doing all they can to prevent the extinction of big cats in the wild. Big Cat Rescue has funded in-situ conservation work for many years, but the sale of their property is going to supercharge these efforts.
We have always taken a portion of our revenue, kind of like the concept of tithing, and devoted it to these projects in the wild. And let me give you some examples. The cats are predators, and they live in areas where there are peoples, many of them agriculturally oriented. If a cat comes, whether it's a lion going after cattle in Africa or, you know, one of the smaller cats in South America going after chickens, when they go after the livestock that these people live on, that, you know, this is how they make their living, then the tendency is for the people to do a revenge killing and kill the animal. And so a way to avoid that is to stop the predation. So, for instance, we have funded what are called predator-proof chicken coops to protect the chickens. So if the cats can't get at the chickens, then there's no reason to go kill the cat. Bomas in Africa that protect the cattle, so the lions can't get at them. So that's one example. In India, they build what are called ground-level wells. They just dig a hole in the ground, and that's their well. Well, at night, a leopard or a tiger, it can be chasing prey, fall in the hole and die. And so we have funded hundreds of fences that just go around these wells to protect the lions, tigers, and leopards falling into the wells and dying. We're helping to fund reintroducing leopards to an area in India that they used to live in and are now gone. Well, why would you do that? If you remove the apex predator, the whole ecosystem goes out of balance. And so, for instance, in the Northeast United States, there are no more cougars. Well, what does that mean? That means there are too many deer. The deers are overeating the plants. There are other animals that rely on the plants and so forth. So there are wonderful examples where you reintroduce the apex predator and the whole ecosystem comes back and starts to thrive because they control the animals that eat too much of the vegetation. The vegetation can come back. The small animals that rely on the vegetation come back. So that's another way of keeping them from going extinct. Another example is figuring out where is the animal's habitat. You know, where are the jaguars in Brazil? So that you can go to the government and say, look, this is the area that we need to protect and not have them get isolated. Or if the areas are isolated, build corridors so that they can move back and forth and protect those. There's a major project in Florida to preserve a corridor so that the panther and other animals can move up and down the state. And so funding the people who collar them and then track where they go is another kind of project that we've done quite a bit of. And then here in Florida, part of our operation is bobcat rehab, where we take in injured or orphaned Florida bobcats. And the orphans, we have to teach to hunt, which is not easy, but we've developed a system to do that. And recently, the last couple of years, we worked with the Florida Wildlife Conservation Commission when we released them to collar them and see where they go. And so now, for the first time ever, we can see the territory they carved out for themselves and the patterns of movement. So it's things like that that we can fund. And many of the people doing this work are solo individuals or very small, not well-funded groups where, you know, $1,000 or $5,000 makes the difference of whether the project happens or not. So, you know, typically we would fund about $100,000 a year in amounts ranging from $1,000 up to the biggest might be $15,000, but most of them more like $5,000. Well, now, after we sell our property and have a few million dollars, you know, over the next decade, we could do much more of that.
So whilst it soon will be the end of Big Cat Rescue as a wildcat sanctuary in Florida, a new adventure begins in supporting in-situ conservation projects around the world. They'll soon be armed with millions of dollars from the sale of the property, and they won't be doing this alone. They bring with them loyal supporters of Big Cat Rescue from the past 30 years, and the millions that follow them on social media around the world. It is a truly exciting moment for the conservation of wildcats.
Well, I really hope that we can manage to reach a stabilized situation where they're not declining. And, you know, there's been some examples of success. You know, the tiger seems to have come back in some areas, but, you know, losing these animals, once they're gone, and it would be a shame. And they're always referred to as iconic. You know, there's something about the cats that is just so captivating. And so the hope is that we end up with some kind of stabilized situation where we can all live together that may be idealistic, but at least we can do what we can to try to help that. Hi, I'm Howard Baskin. Thank you for listening today, and I would encourage you to go to bigcatrescue.org and learn more, or find us on Facebook or Instagram or just about any of the other of the social media places, even TikTok for as long as it exists, I guess.
Thank you so much to Howard for your time, and be sure to follow Big Cat Rescue to join them on this new adventure. Cats of the Wild is created by me, Andy Varvel. Theme music is by Score Squad. Other music and sound effects from Envato.